building and leaving a legacy with our lives. It's what most of us want to do. We look around the world at times of both joy and despair and wonder, what's it all about? Is there a meaning to life? Is there a meaning to our lives? Can we create or discover or uncover something that makes these moments shine with some kind of meaning, something that will endure for more than a moment? We want, most of us, for the world to be touched and changed for the better, for our having spent some time here. This was the theory of a psychotherapist with whom I studied in Vienna, Viktor Frankl. He believed that the highest will that human beings had was not a will towards pleasure or the avoidance of pain, as Freud believed, nor a will towards power, but a will towards meaning, for finding something, creating something. And whether it's found or created is a great religious question about which, like Dr. Cooper, I really don't care. Because what is important is what we do in either creating it or uncovering it. It is by our actions that that meaning is brought in front of us and to the world. Most of us want to make a good difference with our lives. There are people who don't. There are people who, out of despair, want to make a bad difference just to be noticed. There are people when hope is taken away from them, when their societies can't use them well, when they can't find meaning in their lives, look for meaning in their deaths, and that takes a terrible toll on them, on their families, and on the world that they injure in looking for meaning through acts of destruction. Laszlo Toft, which was a real person, an Austrian geologist, and I know Father Guido Sarducci, a.k.a. Don Novello, used Laszlo Toft as a pen name, but it was a real person, and he took an axe to the Pietà. He couldn't create, so he destroyed. That's part of what happens when we don't give to people and help people see the good difference that we can make, that they can make, that can be made in this world. And I think that that's one of the most important challenges that all of us have in the world, which is to find meaning for our lives, and part of that is in helping others to see the possibilities for constructive action, for something that's meaningless. We all want to be noticed. The toxic person, Thornton Wilder in Skin of Our Teeth, has his character Henry, who's the Kane character, say, you know, I'd really like to be loved, but if I can't be loved, I'll be feared. So much of what drives human beings is, look at me, notice me, treat me as I'm important or else. Why do we think there's tagging out in the world? Why do people take brushes and spray cans and tag? Why did soldiers during World War II write Kilroy was here? We want the world to have noticed that we were here, and we have choices about constructive or destructive ways of being noticed, of being loved and not feared. And there are often choices about that. And incidentally, tagging is not anything brand new. If you'll turn to the back, you'll see a bunch of tags on the walls that religious institutions and hospitals and museums all encourage tagging for a price, a way for us to literally leave our mark on the world for a while, so that people will know that we have been here and we have made a choice, in this case, to commit, to build, to change, to touch people, to touch hearts, to make a real difference in the world and get fed and nourished by having done those things. That's part of the reason we come together as Unitarian Universalists. It's to get a sense of the strength that we have, to give each other, when the world is noisy and frightening and overwhelming and we don't know whether to march for war or against war, or whether it is a war or just a kinetic military action, what do? We are explorers. We are explorers trying to figure out how to be in this world and to touch a life, to feed one person, to make a little bit of difference, to perhaps shorten a war by a day, by a life. And as both the Talmud and the Quran say, to save a life is to save an entire world. We come together for the multiplier effect of being together. All of our voices, some of them small, some of them really off key, and I'm speaking personally, when combined, create music and harmony. It is the multiplier effect of the single person joined with another and another and another, and that creating not a weak warbling and wavering, but a voice and something that fills and buzzes and inspires and makes us feel the experience of the sum being great, the whole being greater than the sum of its parts. It's an important multiplier effect that we get in coming together. Now, all of the things that we do as Unitarian Universalists, we could do elsewhere. Lock the doors before somebody takes that literally and marches out. But we could do it elsewhere. We could go and hear wonderful speakers. We could go get tickets for choral music and for orchestras. We could join political parties and political groups and other individual groups that will march and work for the environment and against wars and to end poverty and to feed the hungry and homeless. We could join neighborhood associations that will carry dishes to the ill and to the isolated amongst us. We could, and we do all of these things. And we also do them here, where there is the multiplier effect of being together, and finding out who needs help, what needs help, who's being involved in marching or picketing or pamphleting or feeding or helping or educating the people in the community and reaching out to a larger world. Who better than the people we know? When we are feeling tired, when we are looking at the headlines and feeling, I just have to turn it off. I just can't read another word about human stupidity and mendacity and duplicity, and just let the world march off to hell. And if you haven't felt like that from time to time, you haven't been paying attention. But when we feel like that, we come together. And we come together to share, as in our music, both our strengths and our weaknesses. We come together to be picked up, to be lifted from those moments when we are tired and dispirited. We light candles for mostly for physical issues, but we are together for all of the emotional issues on this wild roller coaster of life, where we feel such hope in a moment and such despair in another. Just 2 months ago, I was filled with joy and glowing for my Tunisians. I was so happy and proud of what Tunisia started. And we saw this movement towards freedom begin across the Middle East with great optimism on the part of many, some rightful hesitation and uncharacteristic modesty and humility in not knowing necessarily where it would lead, but knowing that people were saying enough of this and wanting something better. And there are moments when I hang my head and cry because we're fighting another war. And maybe our motivations are good, and I think our motivations are usually pretty good. But it's hard not to be emotionally labile in a world with all of these changes and all of these reversals and all of the government speak and language that is used to obscure and to act on life and death issues without really moral certainty. And I will tell you personally, I want moral clarity, but not moral certainty. I want to examine the great issues of life, not in isolation, but with others and with you, in order to find a way of handling this intellectually and emotionally. I want clarity, but not certainty. Because moral certainty shuts out other voices and leads to hubristic actions that do not admit to the validity of questions and further examinations. It's a fine distinction, but it's an important one. I want to go through this journey of how to live our lives better and more productively with other questioning, searching, uncertain, and okay, we have trouble with the humility part, but humble people who are not absolutely sure of all of our answers. Because I will tell you, if anyone is sure of exactly what to do in all of the complex issues that face us, run from that person. Because we are in uncharted territory in terms of making complex choices. And it's better, as it is better when we sing in our different voices, in our different keys, to have the gentle corrective of other eyes, of other hearts, of other experiences to help us and to guide us. We come together as a church, as a congregation, to grow, not simply in numbers out there, but as human beings on the inside. We pool our resources, and we pool our resources in order to create this unique community, in order to have access to this building and its light and its heat and its stained glass windows and its classrooms in order to do something. Once upon a time, those of you who come from or have visited New England know that churches had pews and boxes, and strangely enough, the boxes in the old churches had benches in all four sides. Now this, as a professional clergy person, always gives clergy a mixed feeling. It's a full house, but two-thirds of the people are facing either towards each other or away from the pulpit. This fills clergy with some ambivalence because they're facing each other. Why are they facing each other? Because each box had the family bringing a little coal stove. And they huddled around the stove together. That's why it was a box. and they warmed their hands and they warmed their feet. And maybe that's why the preachers did hellfire and brimstone, just to warm up these New England people on a cold winter's day. But something changed when they pooled their resources and said, you know, this really isn't very efficient. Maybe we should get a central furnace. And they started giving money in order to achieve that central furnace. And they got to get rid of the square pew with half the people facing the back. And they got to get rid of the hibachis in the middle of every pew and people grilling sausages in the middle of the offertory and all the kinds of abuses that people do. In order to have central heating. That's what we do with our annual canvas. We are pooling our resources. There's a question?
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, is there any way to talk a little bit over here?
I'm usually people in other zip codes can hear me. All right. You've got it. Okay. Now, if any of you start covering your ears, I'll understand why. Where was I? Page 13, page 6, in this paragraph set. We come together in order to have the efficiency of being able to face forward together, to face a future together. We pool our resources so that those little hibachis are gone, and we have created something for our larger environment with our own efforts. That's what we do every year with our all-member and friend canvas, which is coming up in case you didn't notice and you forgot to sign up for the dinner that Jody, wave again, as long as we're waving, for our dinner where there will be no solicitation. This is the hard sell today. And I'm not driving purgatory up to the door. We believe that if we talk once a year about what it is that we do, that we act responsibly towards each other, that we will pool our resources, that we will be able to create a living community that makes a difference in the lives of real people. Now, I know that I have some fellow clergy folk who are uncomfortable talking about money. Unitarian Universalists can talk about sex, can talk about politics, can talk about drugs, but money is the last taboo. Here's a note. We are not the Crystal Cathedral. We do not have an edifice complex. We are also not $35 million in debt. We gather money, which is simply latent program. We turn all of our contributions into songs, into sermons, some of which end, into potlucks, into social activities, into inspiration that gives us the energy to engage the world. That says at any age, you can still get your PhD. You can still make a difference in the world. You can serve as a role model of learning, of action, of passion, and of compassion. We, as Unitarian Universalists, are huge optimists. We believe that our lives make a difference, and a good difference, and we mean a lot to each other. We have received and built this congregation. There was a saving remnant when this group fell to under 15 that said, yes, we're going to pool our resources and take a chance and hire a clergy person, that would be me, with very little money in the bank. I had some, you didn't. With very little money in the bank, but we're going to gamble on a future. We're going to gamble that we have the wherewithal emotionally and intellectually to grow ourselves to be a force and a factor in our local community. That we will be able someday to be out of the little room downstairs and into the social hall and out of the social hall and into the sanctuary and even to pretty much fill the sanctuary fairly often. That we were betting on ourselves, not as the moral superiors to other religious groups or faith, but a group of people that were searching with open minds and open hearts to create a legacy to pass on to the future. And that future may be our biological children or grandchildren, or maybe your biological children or your adopted children, that we serve to give each other the strength to be a factor in this world. I don't know what comes next theologically. It's a nice adventure. Everybody, I suppose, finds out eventually, one way or another. But tomorrow, I'm responsible for. Touching hearts, touching hands, giving each other the ability to struggle through tough times, to engage the great issues, the theological issues, the political issues of our time with compassionate hearts, to be able to take our talents and our passions into making a difference in the world. There's an old story that I'm sure most of you have heard about the weight of a snowflake. Two forest creatures are like, what is the weight of a snowflake? And one says, nothing more than nothing. And at that moment, one snowflake fell and brought down the branch of a tree, to which the other creature said, perhaps all that is needed for peace is one more voice. We build a legacy with our lives. We come together in this community to build a legacy that we can be proud of. Come, let's build it together.